Now, on Bulldog Live, it's Second Amendment Tuesday. Joining Bulldog is attorney Penny Dean.
Brought to you by Riley Sports Shop and Hooksett. You can find them online at rileysguns.com, the largest gun store in New Hampshire, and the biggest defender of your gun rights right here on Bulldog Live.
Now, I know the Constitution, and it gives me certain rights that I will never, ever give up. At least not without a fight. So if anybody's even thinking they're gonna take my guns away, like the good old boys down in Gonzales, I got one thing to say. Come on, make my day.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but I warn you, you'll have to pry it from my cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it.
One shot at a time.
1-866-823-1077 is our phone number right here on Bulldog Live for Second Amendment Tuesdays. And joining us now is attorney Penny Dean. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Oh, boy, do we have a lot of stuff to talk about in the short amount of time we have.
I'm telling you, those mean judges are giving us more to talk about.
Which one would this be?
That would be Judge Vaughn. Out of Grafton County Superior Court, you know, the one that enjoined Bradley Jardis and Tommy, and I always apologize if I mispronounce his name, Monsingo.
Okay, this is the case that involved the protests at Plymouth State University last week.
Yes, the temporary restraining order. And what the judge did in that case, and I don't know if you've had an opportunity to post that temporary restraining order on your website, what the judge did that I think is very interesting in that case is just ignored RSA 159-26. And basically, because RSA 159-26, in my opinion, in the opinion of many other attorneys and people, takes care of what I call the university problem. And RSA 159-26 says firearms, ammunition, and knives, authority of the state. To the extent consistent with federal law, the state of New Hampshire shall have authority and jurisdiction over the sale, purchase, ownership, use, possession, transportation, licensing, permitting, taxation, or other matter pertaining to firearms, firearm components, ammunition, firearm supplies, or knives in the state. Now, that covers darn near everything I can think of pertaining to firearms. And it goes on to state, except as otherwise specifically provided by statute, no ordinance or regulation of a political subdivision. And what some people may not understand is UNH and Plymouth State are political subdivisions of the state. And in fact, they've even admitted that. They filed a suit in federal court about 8-9 years ago, and the case name escapes me right now. When it comes to me, I'll send it to you.
Okay.
And they basically said, hey, look, we get to sue. We're a political subdivision of the state of New Hampshire. They made that affirmative representation.
Okay.
And so there's a saying in law that once you said it, you can't have it both ways. You either are or you aren't. You know what I'm saying? You either are or you aren't. And so in this particular case, the universities have made affirmative representations in federal court and other places that they are political subdivisions of the state of New Hampshire. And the statute continues on, says that no political subdivision may regulate the sale, purchase, ownership, use, possession, transportation, licensing, permitting, taxation, or other matter pertaining to firearms, firearm components, ammunition, or firearm supplies in the state. Now, here's what's important about this particular law. This law has been in place since 2003. It's not a new law. And in fact, it was amended effective August 6, 2011, which is relatively recently, to add knives.
Right.
Okay, and so the reason it's important is the general court has had an opportunity again and again to review this statute. They reviewed it most recently when they added knives to it. It's clear as a bell it hasn't been changed or amended other than to add knives. And paragraph 2 says, upon the effective date of this section, which was 2003, July 18, 2003, all municipal ordinances and regulations not authorized under paragraph 1 relative to the sale, purchase, ownership, use, possession, transportation, licensing, permitting, taxation, or other matters pertaining to firearms, firearm components, ammunition, firearm supplies, or knives, shall be null and void. And so this statute, in my opinion, totally takes care of this. And what has happened in the particular Plymouth case, I think it was procedurally handled a way different than I would have handled it. I would have taken the offensive and went to court, like the university system did, for an injunction against the university, enforcement of that, and arrest of me. And I really wish they would have handled it that way, because the issue is here, this judge in paragraph 3 says, any person to be found in violation of the USNH weapons, firearms, and explosives policy after receiving notice of the temporary restraining order shall be in contempt of the court and subject to arrest for said contempt. But the question is, can the judge in violation of state law uphold a university or anybody else's policy?
Well, let's look at it this way, because the judge couldn't cite any law that the students would be accused of violating, so therefore he just says, no, you can't do it because I say so, and if you disobey me, I'm going to haul you in and throw you in jail.
That's exactly it. And so this same analogy could be used, because this law was actually passed in direct response to Deerfield years ago. Deerfield was putting up metal detectors in their town buildings. And I don't know if you remember this.
But I do.
Yeah, they put up metal detectors in their town buildings and no signs in violation of state law. And they basically said, oh, we can do this. And so there were those of us who said, no, you can't. We're going to make it crystal clear to you. We're going to make it as clear as we can be. And so this would be analogous to, let's say, Deerfield or some other town making a town ordinance that says, look, if you come in here, we're going to persecute you for carrying firearms, even though the state law says you can't, and going to a judge like the university system in New Hampshire did, and the judge saying, yep, any person in violation of the town ordinance is going to get be in contempt and subject to arrest for contempt because I say so. And you're going to say, but what about state law that allows me to do this? Nope, we're talking about my temporary restraining order here. Next case.
Uh-huh.
You know, and the bottom line is, it's really an affront. Now, of course, I don't know how the temporary restraining order was granted or presented. I wasn't there. Generally, when you get what's called, this was in support of an ex parte emergency motion for temporary restraining order. And generally, ex parte means that one side goes to the court and says, look, this is such an emergency that we need to be heard even without the other side. Now, most courts make you try to get a hold of the other side and says, look, you know, we're going to decide this, but you have to have made a good faith attempt to get a hold of the other side so their side can be heard. Now, in this particular case, I don't know if the judge made the university system try to get a hold of these men. I don't know if they did try to get a hold of these men. You know, I don't know the procedural.
Well, the judge told the men they had to post it on their website, that restraining order.
Right, but the judge sometimes mails it to them or has it served on them by the sheriff. That doesn't mean they were notified at the hearing to be
right,
present at the
right.
hearing.
Uh-huh.
The other thing the judge did, the way I understand it, is they actually don't own the website. Okay. There's a matter of fact, there's a open response to the rogue man who believes he controls this blog, and those who own the blog allege on their website that these two individuals do not own, control, or have any say in this website.
Hmm.
And so one of their arguments, which I think is a valid one, it would be like someone ordering me to post a sign on your house, and you're like, Penny doesn't own this house. She has no right to post signs on this house, and I don't want her to post signs on this house. You know?
Right.
And the judge ordered me to do it, and you're like, tough rocks. Penny doesn't own this house. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, but if I don't post it here, the judge is going to arrest me for not, you know, complying with the order. And at what point can the judge order me to post a sign on a house that doesn't belong to me?
Right.
And the bottom line is they'll say, well, you two are friends or you know each other, and you're going to, like, that has nothing to do with whether or not she has a right to this house and the right to post whatever she wants on my house. You know, it's the same thing when we're dealing with the blog. The blog guy doesn't anywhere deny he knows these people, but that's not the idea. You can't force someone, basically, through sympathy where you go, gee, Penny, I really hate to see you get arrested, so even though I disagree with this, I'll let you post this stupid sign on my house. That's not the way things are meant to be. And so the question we have to ask ourselves is, what evidence was before the court that these individuals had usage rights or ownership rights of this particular blog?
Well, the bottom line is the protest. The guys did show up on campus on Friday, but they did not show up with any of the firearms that they said that they would be showing up with.
Right, and I'll tell people tactically. I understand that, like everything else, you know, it's always easy to debate different ways. Tactically, I'm not sure I would have sent that letter. Okay, they chose to send the letter. I think I would have handled it a little differently. Because what you did, I look at that as, if you're playing football, you give the other side your playbook.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I don't know that that's always the best response. I think the best defense sometimes is a good offense.
Well, let's put it this way. One of the guys, my understanding is, one of the guys, the two involved in this, is a former police officer himself.
Uh-huh.
Who believes that the university system does not have a right to institute these anti-gun policies.
And I think he's absolutely correct.
Excuse me.
And more importantly, okay, I think the issue is what type of university wants to take on the obligation, because here's my position, and I've always said this. If you're at a university and you would normally carry a firearm for self-defense and be able to defend yourself, and you're injured or wounded, I hope your family hires me or someone like me to sue the bejesus out of that university. Because but for the university's prohibiting you from defending yourself, you'd have been able to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they then take on a duty to protect you.
Here's a question I have for you, Penny.
Yep.
For pistol licenses, how old do you have to be able to apply for one?
There is no limit. There is no age limit.
Okay, and to purchase a handgun or possess a handgun?
Well, here's the question, okay? There's two answers to that question. If you want to go, let's say, to Riley's Gun Shop, okay?
Uh-huh.
You have to be 21 years old by federal law to purchase a handgun.
Okay.
And that federal law pertains to licensees. In other words, any person who's a federally licensed firearms dealer has to make sure that you're 21 years of age to purchase a handgun or handgun ammunition, unless you show them it's going to be used in a rifle or something else.
Hmm.
Yeah, and so, but there's all sorts of ways where a person's parents can, and it's kind of, quite frankly, the subject of a longer radio show in order to be complete with people.
All right.
Except, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where I can't answer. I don't want to give a quick answer and mislead someone and get people in trouble. There's all sorts of exceptions and ways that a person under 21 can lawfully acquire handguns. Okay? There's a whole pile of them. But I want to go through that on maybe the next radio show where I go through all the steps.
Well, yes. Yeah, we can do that. I only ask because I'm just wondering how many 18 and 19-year-olds do you think would be able to own a handgun on college campuses, presuming all of what we're saying is correct. That's just what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah. You know what? I don't know. It's kind of going to depend on how tenacious those 18 and 19-year-olds are, because some chiefs of police took the position, well, they can't own a handgun until they're 21, so we're not going to give them a license. And my answer is, that's just plain silly. Number one, I would say to them, there's no limit. So unless you have an objection to this person, meaning they have a criminal record or they're prohibited, you know,
right,
something that, meaning a criminal record prohibit them from firearms ownership, you need to give them a license. The second thing is, there's several of them, I'm sure, because think about it. If you had a daughter, would you want to send her off to school with a chance of being raped without an opportunity to defend herself?
Yes, exactly. Well, look, Penny, I want to take a caller on the line here at 1-866-823-1077. Second Amendment Tuesdays brought to you by Riley Sports Shop, 1575 Hooksett Road in Hooksett. 485-5000 is their phone number, and I'll give you their convenience store hours for you. But first, Dale from Meredith wants to join the conversation. Dale, you're on Bulldog Live along with attorney Penny Dean.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
First, I apologize. My question is not relative to your current topic. I didn't get a chance to catch up with Senator Smith, but I thought with Attorney Dean, maybe you could actually be a help. My question is the legal definition of entitlement. I am recently retired, and I'm constantly hearing Social Security being labeled an entitlement. And having invested in Social Security for 45 years or whatever, I'm just curious what the legal definition of entitlement is. I'll take my answer off the air, and thank
okay.
you for me allowing to ask that question.
All right, Dale, thank you very much. Penny, I don't know if that's something you're able to answer. If not, that's okay.
Yeah, well, it depends on if he's talking, not to be a smart aleck, state law, federal law. And so usually entitlement has kind of been a buzzword, just to quickly answer his question regarding Social Security. And what many people have said is, look, if we had an average investment and put the amount of money we put in and contribute for Social Security, would we get a better or worse return on investment, you know, meaning the Social Security program? And that's kind of, that's a subject for like 10 shows. And
okay.
So entitlement is usually used as a buzzword. I don't think there is per se a legal definition, although it's certainly been used in cases, but I would have to look it up. My thought is right off the top of my head that it's a legal, that it's a buzzword, and there is entitled. But again, it depends on whether you're talking state law, federal law, and a bunch of other things.
Uh-huh. That's a good question. Well, if somebody wants to cut your Social Security benefits, try suing the federal government, see how far you get. That would be my answer. Well, Jim from Barnstead, you're on Bulldog Live along with Attorney Penny Dean. How are you?
Good yourself.
Good.
I talked to you a couple of weeks ago. I sent you all that stuff from when I got my pistol permit from...
Oh, yes.
Pistol license.
Yeah, license, yeah.
I used to be, but not at present, a federally licensed firearms dealer, and a person 18 can own a handgun, but it has to be given to them by their legal parent. They cannot buy it, but the parent can buy it and present them to it.
Right, but there's a lot of other very specifics regarding when they possess and carry regarding written permission that I don't want to mislead anyone, that we really need to go into detail so that people don't get in trouble.
Which we just don't have time to do today, unfortunately. Maybe next week.
Yeah,
right.
No, you're
and they can only be licensed if they're a member of law enforcement.
That's not true. Absolutely not true.
That's what I was always told was the laws. They could only get a license to buy a handgun on their own, being under 21,
if they were
a member of law enforcement.
I apologize. I thought you meant license to carry. So I
apologize. No, license, they can buy a handgun if they're a legal member of law enforcement. And they have to get a letter from, like, the local police department saying, yes, they are a police officer to be able to buy a handgun on their own.
Right, but you're talking from a federally licensed dealer. There's entirely different rules when you're buying from private individuals.
Yeah, it's a whole different ball game.
Because a lot of
people don't even pay much attention to.
Well, Jim, in the interest of time, I want to move on and try and squeeze one more caller in here. Thank you very much for calling in, and Penny, we do have some homework to do, don't we?
We do.
All right, the last caller for this segment, Philip from where? You're on Bulldog Live. How are you?
Thank you. I'm well. I have a quick question for Attorney Dean. I was reading in the paper. Congress has just approved a statute that would allow reciprocity of concealed carry permits throughout the United States in states that allow concealed carry. I wondered if she knew the status of that legislation in the Senate.
I do not know the status in the Senate, okay, but I can tell you that is a wolf in sheep's clothing. You do not want H.R. 822 the way it's written, okay, to pass in this country. In other words, it's one of those things where you hear good things about it, but let me see if I can find one provision. Excuse me.
Huh?
Let me read you one provision in this bill that's very, very scary, okay? There was a troubling amendment added to the bill. It was slipped in on a voice vote. Whenever they slip something in on a voice vote, they're not willing to put their name on the voting line for an amendment. Tells you it's a bad amendment. It was sponsored by Republican David Reihart, and he is C-rated by Gun Owners of America, which should tell you everything about his firearm owner's position. The amendment instructs the Government Accounting Office to conduct a study of the ability of state and local law enforcement authorities to verify the validity of licenses or permits issued by other states to carry a concealed firearm. Do you know what that means in practical English?
No.
I can tell you it's a very, very scary thought. Right now in New Hampshire, if you have a license to carry issued, let's say, from the town of Ware or any other town, okay, only Ware has that information. They don't put you in a statewide database.
I understand.
I'm sorry?
It destroys the confidentiality.
Absolutely. Okay,
oh,
but
boy.
In order for this federal law to come in effect with this amendment, what's going to happen is every state like New Hampshire is going to have to scan in all their licenses and information. So if you're pulled over, let's say, in Mississippi, okay?
We have about 30 seconds here, Penny.
A Mississippi cop can come up and look at your license. This is a horrible, horrible, horrible amendment and a bad bill. It's not going to do the good things you think it's going to do.
Okay. Gotcha. Thanks very much.
Philip, thank you very much, too. Penny, how do people get in touch with you if they have any further questions?
230-9999.
All right, very good. Again, thank you to Riley Sports Shop for making this segment possible with convenient hours Monday through Wednesday, 9 to 5, Thursday and Friday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., Saturday, 9 to 5, Sunday, 10 to 5. Riley'sGuns.com. Attorney Penny Dean, talk to you next week.
Next week.